WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive, still broadcasting in high quality mono sound at AM 1570 in Towson, Baltimore. Next week, we're going to be getting together and doing our Maryland Crab Cake Tour, starting the year right with an old friend at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog. I had a lot of hot dogs before my trips to Memorial Stadium in Highland Town. He has moved his business after three generations out to White Marsh. We'll be there from 1 until 4 on Thursday. All of it brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We'll be giving away some holiday cash drops as well as some Raven scratch offs as well. And our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION, 60 months interest-free, and 5 years there is, and you buy two, you get two free. Almost as good as the deal that Steve Bisciotti got from the state of Maryland and the Stadium Authority. I have tried to cover all of this. Obviously, as a journalist, I have talked to Steve Bisciotti many, many times. I have been thrown out, so I do not get to ask the questions. There were no questions allowed with Sashi Brown and Chad Steele. And I actually had Pam Wood on from the Baltimore Banner, who covered the event on Wednesday, to talk about the great news. And it is great news that the Baltimore Ravens are going to remain here for 15, 20, 25 years, whatever that would be. I like football. I've had a sports radio station here for 25 years this year. I've done sports radio for 31 years. I am old enough to remember when we begged for a football team, and all Commissioner Tagliabue could offer was a museum. But lo and behold, all these years later, we're second leasing now with the Ravens. This guy has covered the ins, the outs, the ups, the downs, the money, the chicanery, to use Vince McMahon's words and terminology back in the day, at a place called fieldofschemes.com. He wrote a book a generation ago about where this money goes and where all of that research and civic development and all that stuff happens. His name is Neil DeMoss. You can find him at fieldofschemes.com. He's a great, great follow out on Twitter on all of these things. And, dude, I've been following you a long time, and all of these municipalities holding the gun up, whether it's Oakland and we're going to Vegas, or St. Louis and we're going to Vegas, or wherever it's going to be. Finally, Baltimore made Field of Schemes. It's been a long, long time. Neil, it is a pleasure to have you aboard. And I saw that you were semi-critical, and certainly where we are, and I'll just open it up by saying I find you to be sort of equal opportunity. None of these are really great civic endeavors. They make us feel good in our souls for the most part, right?
Yeah, I gotta say, chicanery expert. I'm gonna start using that, I think, as my bio. I'm trying to figure out sort of how bad the new Ravens deal is, right? I mean, the line I always use is that all when people ask me inevitably, which is the worst stadium deal, you know, all unhappy stadium deals are unhappy in their own way. But so as I'm sure everybody knows, the original announcement last spring, right, was that the Ravens and the Orioles were each going to get $600 million in state money for renovations in exchange for doing lease extensions. And there were a lot of questions at the time about that, like $600 million for what exactly? Is it just going to be a big slush fund that they can tap for anything they like?
Are they going to build a casino in the parking lot? Things
exactly,
like that, right? Literally.
Exactly, right? So now finally the lease has been approved, and we still don't exactly know the answer to all those questions, right? So for example, when you talk about it's great that the Ravens are going to be staying put for 15 years or maybe 25 years, that is great, but the summary at least that was in the meeting documents didn't exactly say that. It said the Ravens have to stay put, and if they don't, the state can go after them for unpaid bonds, right? So that's not
that's the St. Louis plan, isn't it?
Right, exactly. I mean, the concern, right, is that you worry that it's an out clause that just says they, you know, obviously right now, if there's $600 million in bonds, you know, the Ravens owners aren't going to want to pay $600 million back. But in year 10 or 12 or 14 or something like that, the remaining debt starts to be less. And at that point, it's not all that much to pay to leave or to come back and say, well, you know, we could leave now and only pay, I don't know, $30 million or something like that.
Well, if it's part of a $5 billion plan to go to Paris, paying off $600 million is not a whole lot of money.
Sure, but I'm saying as the amount gets lower. So that's a concern. And on top of that, you know, I just posted an update about this morning. And then after I posted it on the site, I thought, you know, how does this compare to other lease extensions, right? And the I think the highest price so far was there was the Pacers a while back agreed to a lease extension exchange for a bunch of public money, and the New Orleans Saints, and those came in at around $30 million a year, and this one would be $40 million a year. So if we're talking about just did Maryland get a good deal for its money, it's the most expensive subsidy for a lease extension in sports history, at least until the next one.
Well, Neil, I just want to turn this back to what $600 million represents, right? Like, it was less than half of that that built the stadium to begin with, right? And that was controversial as hell, right? Like, we're, the Purple Barneys are coming in and Art Modell and, like, kicking the dogs, and we stole a team, which we swore we'd never do because we're the good guys, and all of this that's going on. It is amazing that the Washington, the name I can't say anymore, that was associated with the franchise for 100 years, that they were such a big animal. They were going to go to Laurel. Governor Schaefer said, you'll get no infrastructure. They got their junk stadium, and it was junk when it was built. It was built within a year of the Raven Stadium, literally turn of the century. And you mentioned this notion of re-upping leases. And I got so much I could get to with you. But the re-upping of leases is almost a new kind of fangled thing, because all of these stadia are coming up now. And the Ravens was one of the first ones, because it was one of the first finagled moving a franchise kind of thing. Nashville's just going to blow theirs up, right? Down in Dallas, they blew the baseball stadium up and they built another one, right? So 30-year cycles to say around here, and I'll do this in my Baltimore accent for you, Neil, because I know you're a New Yorker. I'd say, we just built that thing for them down there. You know, it's only been there a couple years. Camden Yards is brand new. No, it's 30 years old now. And I'm 54 and I was 24 then. And 30 years in the life cycle of a stadium is sort of like, the notion would be it'll be a hunk of junk in 20 years if there is such a thing in the NFL after what happened to DeMar Hamlin, whether our kids are going to play the sport and all of that that goes into it. But the notion that the late 90s birthed all of these new stadia, that this is the time where clock's ticking, we're not going to do 30, we're only going to do 15. We still want to keep that Frankfurt, Germany door open, or that London door open for, like, there's only 32 of these franchises. It's amazing. It's twice as much money as it took to lure the team here. And to your point, other than me talking about it, because I'm the kicked out journalist and I'm a little cranky, it's a lot of money. Nobody else is getting this sort of dough other than these 32 cats and maybe a couple of these NBA and baseball owners when it's all over. Oakland's not getting this deal out for baseball for anything ever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what it comes, you know, it is a lot of money. And I haven't been writing about this quite for 30 years, though it's coming up not that far off. And again, when we first started looking into this, my co-author and I, it was, you know, established that a stadium lasted 30 or 40 years. And now you're seeing it, the lifespan is considered more than 20. I remember years ago when the Miami Heat were looking for a new, or maybe it was Orlando Magic, looking for a new arena. That doesn't even matter. There was so many of them, right, that, you know, got built in the 80s or 90s and then got almost immediately replaced. I asked Rob Fort, who's a sports economist, you know, what do you think the lifespan is of a stadium or arena now? And he didn't miss a beat. And he said, if I'm a sports team owner, I don't see anything wrong with getting a new stadium every year. Right. and that's kind of the thing, right? Is that the only real leverage they have is we're going to take your team away, or we could threaten to take your team away. It doesn't have to be realistic, right? The New York Yankees, were talking up how, you know, we could move, to New Jersey or to Charlotte, North Carolina or something, if we don't get a new stadium in the 90s. The New York Yankees are not moving to Charlotte, North Carolina, right? The entire value of the New York Yankees is they play in New York, but they still threatened it. I think the team's owners are realizing that, you know, once you get the stadium, how do you then get more public money? And what you have to do is say, well, if you want us to extend our lease. And that's why I'm so concerned about what are the out clauses in the lease, right? Because if you have an ironclad lease that's going to last 15 or 25 or 30 years, that's one thing. If you have a lease that the team can buy its way out of in 5 or 10, then suddenly, you know, you're looking at not just $600 million now, but possibly more money in a decade or two. And that's, you know, the even more scary part. And again, we're talking about the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers have made a just racket out of this, where every few years they come back and they say, okay, we want more money for more renovations, we'll extend our lease a little bit more. and then, you know, again, come back another few years after that. It's just been going on and on and on.
Socialize the cost, privatize the profit. Neil DeMoss joins us here from Field of Schemes. Obviously, you know, Neil, I can reach you 1,000 times in 1,000 circumstances when the Atlanta Braves moved out of the city, when Camden Yards empties out, where John is going to keep the Orioles here until the Rockets' red glare, and, you know, who, they don't even know who representation is in New York for the Major League Baseball franchise here for a number of years as to who could make decisions or would want to make decisions, and now they're dragged into court. And my understanding is their political leaning is to wait for Wes Moore to run the state, which is 10 days from now, and they're going to negotiate with Wes. But Steve wanted to get this deal done with Larry Hogan. But the tea leaves behind all of this, and again, you study this, and I'm going to before this is over, I'm going to ask you why you're such a big shot and why you wrote the book and why I come to guys like you on days like this, and you have all of these facts and morsels of information at your disposal, sort of in an encyclopedia kind of way. The Orioles and the Ravens and how this relates in our state and what it means in our state and this stadium authority and how the structure is here, where I saw the Bears are going to move again out to the suburbs and they need a dome and they need Beyonce and Jay-Z to play, like all of that that's baked into this. Why is this a good deal for Steve Bisciotti to take the $600 million, even though you'll agree it's a lot of money, it's great, and where the Orioles are in regard to this from an outsider who studies this year round? And I'm not going to have anybody smarter than you literally on the show, because the local reporters here don't get it right in general. Jeff Barker hasn't gotten this right in 50 reports, which John Angelos tells him. So I really do rely on you to say, where does this lie in all of this? And I think in my mind, because our stadia were among the first ones, that right, these re-ups, this is sort of setting the bar like they set the bar on quarterbacks and salaries, right? Like Steve signed up first. I don't know. That's, why was there a gun on Steve to do this now? Why didn't he wait till 26 or 20? I mean, he could have waited longer to do this.
I mean, I think this is a good deal for him, right? Clearly, if you're getting $600 million, you're still paying no rent. You're still not sharing any of the stadium revenues. You're just paying for operations and maintenance. You know, that's clearly, you know, something that no team owner is going to pass up. And again, I haven't seen the lease, so I don't know exactly what's in it. But there's, you know, I'm certainly concerned that if operations and maintenance is something that the Ravens have to pay, and now they've got this big slush fund to pay for, you know, improvements, you know, can they just let something fall apart and then say, oh, we got to tap that slush fund in order to replace it, rather than actually paying to maintain it? Again, this is something that would be good to see the lease, to see what's actually required in there. But, you know, I mean, I think this is a great deal for him. Again, it's a record amount of money per year for a lease extension. You know, I think it will kind of set the bar for other cities. Which is, again, something that I'm concerned about.
Neil, take it to the baseball side. And I had Pam Wood on earlier, and everybody can go out to Baltimore Positive and visit that and see me talking to Pam from the Baltimore Banner about this, because she did cover it. And, you know, the Ravens were no speaky, and Chad and Sashi with their, we'll tell you later, to your point, you call it a slush fund, that's fine. I'll just call it, you know, free money is literally what it is. For the Orioles to not do a deal now, not have a deal now, in your mind, in not playing the Rockets red glare, and he would never take the team and any of that BS that I don't believe any more than Howard Balzer believed that the Cardinals or the Rams were going to stay in St. Louis. I'm back to the Cardinals. I'm two thievings ago for the poor St. Louis people. They still have great frozen custard there. The Orioles, are they more valuable without a lease than if they were tied into a 15, 20, whatever, long-term lease in Baltimore, given the demographics, given the stadium, given where they are, given the American League, all of that bakes into it? Are they a more valuable property with a lease or without a lease in your mind?
I think they're a more valuable property with a lease and $600 million, right?
I forgot that part. I left that out.
Right.
Sorry.
You know, yeah, sorry. So I mean, it's not like, you know, the Orioles would be more valuable in, I don't know, Nashville or someplace like that, right? I mean, this is the thing about baseball, is that unlike football, where you can put a team pretty much anywhere as long as they show up on TV, because all the money in football is basically from national TV money and ticket sales, right? But every team sells out, so it's not a huge distinction. So if you look at the revenue numbers across the NFL, they're not, the variance isn't that enormous. Whereas in baseball, you know, the Yankees genuinely do make a ton more money than the Royals, you know? And the Orioles are sort of towards the bottom of that because Baltimore isn't the biggest market. But baseball's done a really good job of filling all of the big markets. So where else would they go? You know, I don't think they're going to be more valuable in Nashville, especially since they would have to build an entirely new stadium there. Or, you know, any of the other Montreal, you know what I mean? It's, there's not really a lot of better options. So I think the best option for the Angelos is absolutely to take the $600 million and run with it. As to why it hasn't happened, I mean, you know, it could be disorganization within the organization. It could be because there's differences between the two leases, right? Because of the times and the IRS rules around when the Orioles sign their lease and the Ravens sign theirs. The Orioles pay rent, but not maintenance operations. The Ravens pay maintenance operations, but not rent. And I know that at one point the Orioles were trying to challenge that and didn't get anywhere in the courts, but you know, who knows? They may
well, Peter's thing was always, I get what they get, whatever they get, I get, right? That was the way this was structured.
It's basically the same amount of money that they're paying. It's just paying through a different mechanism. So, but they may want to change it around to, you know, to change it to being paying maintenance and operations, which again, wouldn't necessarily be worse for the state. But you know, if it creates loopholes where they can skimp on maintenance instead of, you know, rent is rent, right? You have to pay it. So again, it's there's a lot of unknowns here that aren't huge. The basics we know, which is, you know, $600 million in exchange for just continuing to play where they always have played and where, you know, they almost certainly wouldn't leave because there aren't better options. But there are a lot of details that we don't know. I mean, you know, the thing that drives me crazy about all these lease negotiations is the cities and the states never seem to realize the leverage that they have, right? I mean, Maryland could go to the Orioles and the Ravens and say, you've got a good deal here. You've got stadiums that are fairly new. You've got a good fan base. You know,
you're making $300 million a year and profit off of your franchise.
Exactly.
You bought it for $575 and it's worth $5 billion?
Exactly.
You can afford to buy new televisions, dude, right?
Yes, you could go and say, if you want to continue to stay, how about you start paying some rent? How about you start sharing some of the revenues? At least start from that.
You've gotten rich off of this. Our city's deteriorated during this course of this time, right?
And then let them bargain you down, right? But at least if you're trying to do any negotiation, right, you start by asking for what you want, and then you negotiate down to what you can get.
They wanted when they got $1.2 billion out of both the teams. I wonder what they asked for.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It seems like I don't know what they asked for, but it seems like they, you know, they got everything that they wanted. And again, we've seen this before. Like you mentioned with the Rams, I spoke to someone years ago who had helped negotiate the Rams deal with St. Louis, and he said that his boss was constantly throwing in, oh, let's ask for this, let's ask for that. And he was like, they're never going to give us that. Let's try. But worst they can do is say no. And they said yes to everything. That's just the negotiators for the public side are very, very bad on this. And the one other point I wanted to say when you were asking about why now, you know, there is a lot of money, public money floating around right now, right? You know, you've got infrastructure money, you've got the COVID relief money. So states and cities are feeling a little bit more flush than they might have a few years ago. So it's a, you know, good time to sort of strike while the iron is hot and say, hey, you know, you want to put some money into, you know, an investment in future business for your community, right? How about you throw $600 million or, you know, $1.2 billion, or really it was like, I think it's $1.8 billion if you count the money that was for infrastructure around the Commander Stadium and the minor league baseball stadiums in the entire package. So we're seeing a lot of that now. You know, I mean, 2022 was a record for $1 billion deals in sports and was a record for $1 billion deals, honestly, in other forms of corporate subsidies, right? You know, computer chip plants and auto plants and things like that. So, and I think that's not unrelated to the fact that when there's public money sitting out there, you know, the lobbyists are going to be the first ones to sort of try and grab at it.
Neil DeMoss is here. You know, I would say my background is in being a journalist in the 80s, and I was young. I was 18, 19, 20 years old, chasing girls and rock and roll and the history of Hammer Jacks. And I'll never forget an interaction I had with my boss, Jack Gibbons, who was the sports editor at the Baltimore Sun, the Evening Sun at the time. And I went into him at one point, and I think Ken Rosenthal was involved covering the Orioles, and they had just sort of announced Camden Yards. Edward Bennett Williams was going to put a shovel in the ground. And I said something flippant that a dumb 19-year-old from Dundalk would say to my boss. I'm like, business of sports, who cares about any of that? And he looked at me, and I don't know that he knew when I was 54, I'd make a 30-year career of doing this and being the one guy left here that's going to do a segment like this and actually ask where the money's going and like all of that. But you come at this differently. I want to give you a little oxygen to talk about, because I've been hearing about you for a quarter of a century. I think you may have been on my syndicated show a million years ago writing about this type of stuff. You began as, I want to say, economist, book writer, professor. But give me your background in this space, because there aren't 10 guys like you, or gals I could call, and you have a partner as well, that I can call in this space that would have the depth that you do this professionally, and you're on this all the time when it comes to where public money is going in regard to sport around the world, literally.
The irony is that I have started as none of those things, right? I'm not an economist. I took one economics class in college. I had not written any books before Field of Schemes. I'm certainly not a professor of anything. I started as just a journalist and a sports fan, right? As did Joanna Kagan, my co-author on the book. We were both people who were like fans of sports, fans of teams, concerned about the fact that, it seems like team owners are getting an awful lot of money from cities that can't really afford it. What is this new trend that we're seeing?
Someone called the original sports washing, right? Literally.
Yeah. So we were like, wow, and so we started looking into it, realized it was going on all over, wrote the book and thought, wow, we really managed to sort of tap into this moment in history, right? I think we even said this to our publisher, that we got to put this book out because this is a time, the 1990s, we'll never see again, when, sports teams are, raking in all this public money. And I did not expect to still be discussing this in the year 2023. I did not think that the same deals would be going down. But at this point, eventually you cover it enough. And I've written about this for the Village Voice and Defector and Vice and all sorts of different places that, over the years. But eventually you sort of start learning and becoming an expert. And, I did not expect to become an expert on tax-exempt bonds, but eventually you have to, as a journalist, figure this stuff out. And there are other people out there doing good jobs. I don't want to say that, you and I are the only ones looking at this. But, the state of journalism today, as you well know, and as anybody who reads what's left of newspapers and websites well knows, right, is that there are very few people with very little time and very little expertise who really just are told, go out and write 6 posts today. And if it's just a matter of reprinting the press release from the team, then that's fine. Do that and move on to the next thing. So I do feel for the journalists who are doing a crappy job of, covering this stuff. But really, somebody has to be doing it more, because there's an awful lot of money at stake. And, it's just crazy to think that nobody is doing oversight in this beyond saying, lease extension, good, the Ravens are going to stay.
Couple things. I got mouthy when this came out, and I shared your piece on Wednesday night. Somebody got mouthy on my thread. Imagine that. The old sports radio taking phone calls from everybody. Who analyzes these things? When they come out, there's always an economist that is a part of Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe, and they're going to come out with the economic impact of the millions of the blah, 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 and the Jay-Z concert and the hotel nights and the amusement to the amusement and the value of the red, white, and blue lights that we have there for the civic pride of our community and blah, 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 like all of that. The stadium's been here 30 years. I live downtown. This was my view for 19 years. I lived at the Inner Harbor. And I love – my last name's Aparicio. I came here off a boat from Venezuela, like baseball, 60s. That's who I am. I'm a sports guy. Always have been my whole life. I love it. I was the first guy to dig a shovel in. Welcome, Art. Come on in. We'll put on purple. We'll put purple flamingos up on the lawn. We love purple. I'm that guy. I've built a life out of that. But there is a point in all of this where I do wonder, what if the Ravens never came? What would have happened to our city? Would we be like Sacramento? Would we be a one pony? Would we be like Portland? Would we be diminished? Would we, in my Charlie Ekman voice, would we not be big league? We're a big league town. We're a major league town. We ain't a minor leagues. And we had minor league hockey here. We had soccer. Like, I've lived through all of it. We lost the Bullets in the 70s. My dad hated Abe Pollin over that forever. But the analysis always seems to come out and say, well, there's economic impact in getting the All-Star game or getting the Final Four or all these Super Bowls that I go into every year. And I see them come to life for like 72 hours and it all goes away. And it's not what they sold to the local, that they would sell more wings or pizza or beer or whatever is being sold. I am into both of these stadiums, and I tell you, with the Orioles, the dilapidation of the brand and seeing Red Sox and Yankees fans bus in by the tens of thousands in the aughts and seeing living in the city and seeing what a steakhouse looked like and what a restaurant looked like and what the hotels and the convention, like all of that. I know I love it. I know on parade days it's had great value. I know we all have a affinity for this and it says Baltimore on it, but I don't know if it's a good deal or not, Neil. I really don't, but I know there's an analysis that will say the greatest economic impact ever. That's why Steve just got $600 million. Who's doing these studies and are they on the up and up?
Consultants, right? I mean, consultants who are working for the teams, right? So it's basically they are being paid to show why it's a good deal. So those things are not, and I know people who work for them, they, you know, they're not, they start with the $600 million number, right? Of how much money you're getting and then say, work backwards and show how this is worth $600 million to the state. So those numbers are garbage basically. You know, cause they're not,
I appreciate you saying just garbage is rubbish.
I mean,
is what you
know,
would
I mean,
say.
It's not meant, they're PR documents, right? They're not meant to be serious economic analyses. It's not like they sat down and said, you know, sit down and tell us whether this is going to be a win or a loss or a break even. It's show us how this will be good. When economists, actual economists who aren't being, you know, paid by the team, look into it, they find that the actual value is somewhere between nothing and not very much, right?
Really? Not, yeah. Literally, not very much.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a couple economists say that the best way to determine the economic impact is to take the official projection and move the decimal point over one, you know? So it's about 10% of what they claim. But, you know, there's certainly cities that, you know, have built new stadiums and seen no economic impact because, you know, if the Ravens were not in Baltimore, and there was a time when the Ravens were not in Baltimore, and it's not like people in Baltimore didn't do things, right? They may have gone to more Orioles games. They may have gone, you know, out to dinner more. Who knows what they did with that money? But, you know,
did when they stopped going to Orioles games, which everybody sort of did for 25
right.
years, right?
So, you know, and, you know, look, I love sports. I came into this as a sports fan. I am still a sports fan, despite knowing all that I now know. But if you look at this, you mentioned Portland, Oregon, right? Portland, Oregon famously did not build an NFL stadium in the 70s when they could have gotten an expansion team, and still does not have, you know, either football or baseball, or hockey. And they, you know, Portland is tremendously successful at what it is, right? You know, it's attracting lots of new people. It's, you know, expanding. You know, it's considered a good place to live, despite the fact that it doesn't have a lot in terms of sports. So there are lots of different ways to be a successful city, I guess, is the answer. And lots of different ways to be an unsuccessful one. And, you know, I think if you ask any economist, should you spend $600 million on renovating a football stadium, they would say you could pretty much do anything else with the money and it would be a better investment.
Well, they didn't do it in San Diego, didn't do it in St. Louis. You know, Vegas got sold off to the Gypsies and the Wolves. And for municipalities that want it, and by the way, Neil DeMoss is our guest. He's at fieldofschemes.com. You can read all of his work along with David Hayward, all these the folks that do the good work that you do up on your site as well. Nashville, last topic for you, because you sort of just breeze by, well, the Orioles lease in Nashville and to the Rockets red glare, and John wears his cowboy boots and actually lives in Nashville, and they got guys named Garth there that don't even need a last name. They just, last time I even saw your site, a couple, 3 months ago, whatever it was, is the Nashville bigger, better deal that they put on there, that they're going to have concerts and hoedowns and CMT and woo. And you're like, no, they're not. They're going to have the same stuff they had there before. And I remember reading that about, and I thought maybe one day he'll be coming on here when Steve gets his deal before Uncle Larry leaves. Nashville and where it is in baseball. Listen, I'm not a doomsdayer. I'm a guy that doesn't trust the Angelos family from firsthand experience, right? Like, I don't believe a word they say. They don't even trust each other. So, and that's been borne out, right? So I don't believe anything he said. And by the way, that whole Rockets red glare thing, I had to hijack a tourism press conference with Christine Brennan and Dick Cass and ask that question as a citizen because he's never available to the media. So that whole statement, he meant that the franchise will be here as long as the Rockets red glare. And I was the one to ask that question. And it never would have been said. So it gave him a PR moment. But all things being equal, and I mean, God, the guy that moved the Rams out of St. Louis was from Missouri. So I, you know, let's not play that game.
Mm-hmm.
For you with Nashville, why is it not plausible or feasible, other than the other owners wouldn't allow it, and you know, they wouldn't want it, and they like Camden Yards? And why is Nashville not feasible in your mind? Not just to steal the Orioles, but to steal the A, steal anything to get a team.
Market size, you know, market size, and the fact that baseball is different from football, right? You can have a football team in Nashville, as I was saying, because as long as you're getting a cut of that national TV money, you can put a football team in Green Bay, right? You can put a football team anywhere. Whereas with baseball, you really do need to have a bigger market. And,
you can't put it in San Juan. They try.
Right, yeah. Nashville is just, hey, look, could Nashville conceivably have a baseball team someday? A Major League Baseball team someday? Possibly. Would it be an improvement over Baltimore? Absolutely not. You know, it's the same conversation I was just having with somebody today about the Tampa Bay Rays, and like, oh, they should move to Orlando. You know, I mean, no, they shouldn't move to Orlando, you know, or
you should get people to come in Tampa.
They're not doing great in St. Petersburg, but they would do even worse in Orlando. And I think that's the same situation in Baltimore. You know, the Orioles are supported in Baltimore when they're good, and they may actually be good again sometime soon. You know, they have a lot of good young players. If they, you know, don't keep signing guys like Jordan Lyles and Kyle Gibson, you know, actually put a team around them, they might actually have a team, you know, have a shot at something.
That's
someday.
Not a trend. That's not a bug. That's a feature. You know, I mean, you
yeah, I know. I'm
every
just
Chris
saying.
Benson and every Doug Trayback, and I can take you through them all.
I'm just saying they have a better shot than they did during the Chris Davis years. So anyway, I don't think it's impossible they would move to Nashville. I certainly don't think it's like, oh well, the Angeluses would never do that. I just think that you have to take seriously, you know, would a team be successful, more successful in Nashville than Baltimore? And I think the answer is no.
Okay. Well, fair enough. And I really appreciate your time. It's great having you on. I would send anybody out to follow your work. Critical eye. Is that fair to say you're a critical eye in all of the stadium and arena and civic money games?
I'm a critical eye with a sad tear dripping out of one corner at the amount of time that we have to keep doing this.
Is that because you're a Mets fan or no?
There's that as well.
Neil, I appreciate you. Thanks for beginning our year with some great, great information and some great, great insights into Steve Bisciotti, $600 million. I was going to say billion, $600 million. The franchise values are crazy too, right? That's its own thing as to Steve buying it for $575. I had Pam Wood on. I was with Pam Labor Day because I had Governor Westmore. He was going to be the governor. It was very clear at that point. Mm-hmm. And that day we talked about it. I went back. We were talking about the franchise being maybe worth $3.5 billion because we thought the Washington franchise was worth $5 billion. Mm-hmm. These things go up pretty exponentially. It really is an amazing amount. The valuation of this is going up twice the amount of money that we're giving him, literally, in six months.
Yep. It's a great scam.
It's good work if you can get it. Appreciation.
Good to be
rich. Neil DeMoss, out of Field of Schemes. You can find me doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour next week. We're going to be at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog. It's a hot dog and crab cake tour. We're going to be giving away some Maryland Lottery scratch-offs, as well as our friends at Window Nation helping us support all that we're doing into the winter. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.